You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Here it comes.
The storm never seen before. Angel City fire. Prophets from the satellite, students of the deep. Ooh. To disturb you. Ooh. In the dream.
When summer comes in winter, is that a problem? Sure, there's a flood of bad news. We may be hurting in our minds, sore in our hearts, but we can't let this pass. Why was the American West so hot? Hotter than anyone's ever seen. Hotter than even doomers believed possible in March. We explore this historic heat event with the weathermaster, meteorologist Jeff Masters. Then large systems specialist Deirdre Desjardins uses AI tools to discover a chain of forces from the hot Pacific Ocean through Hawaii flooding right to the western droughts, disappearing snowpack, and the prospects for this summer. Both science and news reports confirm a regime shift in the atmosphere, complete with blocking patterns holding extreme weather that pops up around the world. Are you ready for the big truth? I'm Alex Smith. Welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Radio EcoShock.
Why did 14 states of the American West get summer in March? Was the U.S. heat dome related to floods in Hawaii and Canada? What just happened here? If you want the true record, you want Jeff Masters and friends. One of the original NOAA hurricane hunters, meteorologist Jeff Masters, co-founded the Weather Underground and now contributes to Yale Climate Connections. From Michigan, Jeff Masters, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex.
Your recent piece at Climate Connections is titled Mind-Blowing March Heatwave Crests. You've seen a lot of weather in your career. Why is this specific event stopping you in your tracks?
It's the timing of it more than anything. March is a very unusual time to get summer-like heat because the sun just isn't up as high as it is in the heat of summer. And we had definite summer-like temperatures. I mean, temperatures over 100 for consecutive days in Phoenix. We had the all-time March heat record for the entire country beaten not only on four straight days, but beaten by a large margin. It used to be 108 degrees, and we had a couple stations hit 112 during this heat wave. So the timing and the intensity and the length, this was a 10-day long heat wave, and the breadth as well. I mean, this covered most of the western U.S. We had 17 states set their all-time March heat record during this heat wave. So all these factors together make it simply extraordinary, something that I've only seen one other time in my career, and that was back in 2021 when we had a summer heat wave in June in the Pacific Northwest and Canada.
But why did it just sit there? I mean, usually weather moves along from west to east, but this didn't.
That's a great question. I mean, we can trace the intensity of the heat wave to climate change making these extremes hotter, but you also need a dynamic contribution. The jet stream has to cooperate, has to get stuck in place for a long period of time to let the heat build. And we're less sure about what the climate change connection might be to that particular event. The jet stream normally just keeps progressing from west to east, carrying along high and low pressure systems with it. But if the jet stream gets stuck in a very contorted position and doesn't budge for multiple days, then you get long periods of extreme weather. Heat, if it happens to be you got high pressure over you, or storms if you happen to have low pressure over you, like happened in Hawaii during this same event. So the climate models just have a lot of trouble simulating that in the current climate. I mean, they don't really do a good job forecasting when these blocks are going to occur. So figuring out how climate change might affect these blocks, that's almost an impossibility because the climate change models simply don't handle the current situation very well.
And people just weren't ready for this. People were debating whether to put snow shovels away or whatever, and this hit. They didn't have their cooling centers ready in Phoenix as they would have had it come in the summertime. And I have to wonder, it probably caught a lot of plants off guard as well. I haven't heard about that yet, but I that must happen.
The big risk is if we get killing frost after this, because we had a almost as intense heat wave here in Michigan in March 2012, where we had a week straight of 80 degrees Fahrenheit. And after that, I mean, April came and we had more seasonable April weather with lots of killing frost, and it just wiped out the cherry crop, the berry crops. And that's a risk for the western U.S. here, because April is a very cold month in a lot of cases. And we're going to risk these plants coming out way too early and being susceptible to freezing temperatures.
Yeah, the buds on my pear trees are all fat and ready to come out and flower, and now it's well below freezing at night, so we'll see what happens. What did the heat dome mean for the snowpack that can determine summer water downstream for a lot of states?
We're seeing a record crash in the amount of water stored in snowpack in the Rocky Mountains, both in the headwaters of the Colorado River, which supplies water to Arizona and surrounding states, and also in the snowpack from California up into Oregon. When we did get precipitation this year, it tended to fall as rain, not as snow, so we started off in a bad situation. And getting this heat wave, when we did, and how intense it was, means that what little snow we had is on its way out. And it's going to be a situation where we have less than 50% of the normal water we're used to seeing this summer flowing into the reservoirs from the mountains, just because we don't have so much snowpack. And that's going to impact water supplies for cities, for people, for agriculture. And it's also going to make the wildfire season a real humdinger this year, I'm afraid.
I suppose lots of people did enjoy their lovely break of warm weeks. I would. It's t-shirt weather. Should we be nervous?
I think we should, because this sort of extreme is difficult for a lot of systems to deal with, both human and natural. I mean, we evolved to the climate of the 20th century, and now the 21st century is throwing these curveballs at us. That's going to cause hardship, particularly, like I mentioned, with water supply. The wildfire season, we're going to see a lot of wildfire smoke episodes this summer because of it. Wildfire smoke kills between 24,000 and 41,000 Americans each year. And that sort of cost is a massive cost for us to bear. If you look at the dollar cost of that sort of death toll, that's like 1% of GDP. So a lot of reasons to be concerned about it, and climate change could be throwing more of these events at us in the future. I mean, we already saw one in 2021, like I was mentioning, in the Pacific Northwest. Now here we have 5 years later, one just as extreme, just absolutely insane meteorologically. I looked at both these events when they were happening and said, no, it can't be. You know, we're getting temperatures unheard of, 121 in Canada in that one June heat wave in 2021, 112 in Arizona in March during the last week's heat wave. Absolute insanity. So more insanity probably to come, courtesy of climate change.
Well, there you've heard it. The news before the news. We will hear more about all this summer, no doubt. So a World Weather Attribution Study, that's a group of international scientists, they found the Western Heat Dome was virtually impossible without human-induced climate change. Are a lot of people aware of that, the real role of climate change behind what just happened?
I think a lot of people are aware of it because particularly old people, I mean, if you've been around for decade after decade, you know that this is not normal. And we're really not even in a new normal because things are changing so quickly. So people are aware of it if they tend to be older, I think. But unfortunately, our ability to attribute things to climate change is limited. These tools that we have, like World Weather Attribution does, they can say part of what climate change may be doing, but the jet stream shenanigans that are going on, we're less sure about. And I'm pretty sure that we're seeing a significant impact from climate change causing disruption to basic atmospheric circulation patterns that are helping cause these sorts of events. Yeah, you can say, well, the planet's a degree or two warmer, so that boosts the temperature of this heat wave. But it's the actual circulation changes that accompany climate change that we have less confidence in being able to say what climate change is doing. That's where things are really starting to get crazy. And I'm confident that we're seeing a massive contribution from climate change in some of these stuck jet stream patterns causing these incredible extremes.
And this heat dome arrived as the western states were already going through a long, long drought. And I was surprised to find that heat, not lack of precipitation, is driving U.S. droughts. That was in a NOAA research paper published November 2024. Jeff Masters, does that suggest that simple greenhouse warming could lead to more drought years, like a drying of the West?
Absolutely. The West is in a mega drought that's unprecedented in hundreds of years. And a lot of that is not because of lack of precipitation, like you were mentioning. It's just the fact that the climate has warmed. When you warm up the air, you make plants thirstier. They lose more moisture to the atmosphere, and that dries out the soil, and it makes them more susceptible to dying off. So it's that thirstiness of the plants that is an unavoidable result of human-caused climate change that's really driving drought now. Yeah, there are some regions that are getting less precipitation, and some of that is apparent in the desert southwest, but it's really hotter temperatures that are driving drought conditions now. And the U.S. is in serious shape this year for drought. We've got more than half the country in drought right now. The forecast for April's not looking very wet. It's looking average to below average, so we're really going to have a multi-billion-dollar drought impact this year with a lot of wildfires.
Now, in mid-March 2026, back-to-back Kona lows delivered some of the worst flooding Hawaii has seen in decades. We had destructive winds, flash flooding, evacuations, rescues, major infrastructure damage. Jeff, what is a Kona low, and what makes them different from tropical cyclones or hurricanes? Are they different?
They are different. They're very wet, so they have that in common with tropical cyclones, but they're cold weather sorts of phenomena. They have a lot of cold air aloft that helps feed the storm, make it stronger. It's just a fundamentally different energy source than a hurricane. But the result is the same. When a Kona low gets stuck in place, like happened back in mid-March, then it's going to dump wave after wave of precipitation. And the reason they're called Kona is because the Kona side of Hawaii is the west side. That's the side that's usually dry. And in this case, the precipitation is coming from the opposite direction it usually does, which is a problem because, you know, the dry side is not as adapted to heavy rains as the wet side, the eastern side of the Hawaiian Islands. So this Kona low system was actually part of the same stuck jet stream pattern that brought the heat wave to the desert southwest. Everything got jammed up in a big traffic jam. The low pressure stayed stuck over Hawaii. The high pressure got stuck over the western U.S. And both of those areas were subject to unprecedented extremes, just of the opposite kind.
So we may really be looking at just one big event.
It was one big event. And there were some other stuck jet stream patterns going on worldwide at that time. I know in Asia they had really insane heat waves going on, too, where they were breaking all-time records by 30 degrees Fahrenheit. So extremes going on globally in this case, we just didn't hear about them as much over in Asia because, well, we had plenty to pay attention to here in the U.S.
And meanwhile, we had a long atmospheric river strike British Columbia in mid-March. We had heavy rains, high winds, floods, landslides. Are there any connections between that and the heat dome just to the south?
Absolutely. That atmospheric river that was hitting the Pacific Northwest in British Columbia was attached to the Kona low over Hawaii. So sometimes we call that the Pineapple Express. You get a moisture conduit flowing directly from the subtropics near Hawaii up into the Northwest, delivering all that heavy precipitation. Moreover, that intense precipitation that was falling when water condenses, when water vapor condenses, it releases heat. It's the original heat energy that went into evaporating it in the first place. We call it latent heat. And now heat is energy. And this atmospheric river was pushing all that heat that was released from Hawaii up into the Pacific Northwest and Vancouver area. And that heat energy went directly into feeding the intensity of the ridge of high pressure over the western U.S. So you had a situation where a storm was helping drive a heat wave and a drought. The heat from the storm, which was augmented by climate change and global warming, making ocean temperatures warmer and providing extra heat energy, that extra heat went directly into both the storms and into the heat wave.
Yes, I wanted to raise that. Talk about the role of sustained heat in the North Pacific Ocean in all this March weather madness.
We're familiar with heat waves over land, but we get what are called marine heat waves, too. And they tend to be longer lasting because the ocean has a longer memory. It doesn't warm up or cool down as rapidly as the land does. So when you do get a lot of warm water, it's going to disrupt atmospheric circulation patterns. And that's part of why this jet stream got stuck in place during this heat wave, was because of a marine heat wave going on, altering the jet stream pattern. Now, what we have going on because of the heat wave in the southwest U.S. is the adjacent waters got superheated. We're talking about June levels of heat now in the waters off of California, Southern California, Gulf of California, and that's going to affect things this summer. You got all that warm water right offshore, it's going to contribute to heavy rainfall events inland, and we've seen that in the past, particularly over Death Valley. They had record flooding a few years ago when we had very, very warm ocean temperatures right offshore there. So we're at risk of extreme flooding this summer because of all that hot water off of the coast from the heat wave in March.
But if the North Pacific is strangely warm and it's providing more moisture into the atmosphere, why isn't that rain reaching the western states that need it in their drought?
That's the way it goes with the atmosphere. It has preferential patterns of the storm track gets it set in a certain place, and one area will get hammered after time following the jet stream as it pulls these low-pressure systems along it, whereas other parts of the country just get avoided. And we're seeing that with the drought pattern in the U.S. right now. The center of the country is actually doing pretty well for rain. Places like from Missouri up into Michigan, the center of the country. And that's the way the storm track's going. But the southwestern part of the country and the southeastern part, Florida's in record drought now too. So the storm track is basically going from the Pacific Northwest, bulging down into the central U.S., Missouri, Arkansas, then bowing back up north, Michigan, Ontario, but avoiding the southwest U.S., Texas. It's avoiding Florida, Mississippi, and Alabama have wildfires right now. And the East Coast is also in drought, quite dry. Storm track is missing them. So it's just one of those things. The jet stream likes to set up in a particular pattern, and it gets stuck in these sorts of long-term situations that encourage drought in one area and then right adjacent to it, flooding.
As we speak, everyone from heads of state to YouTube influencers say they are losing sleep over the sudden shutoff of fossil fuels from the Persian Gulf. Now governments are recommending what climate watchers called for all along, little things like ride-sharing, fly less, adjust your thermostat. Is there an intersection between your decades of weather and climate reporting and this sudden oil and gas shock? Do you have thoughts on it?
You know, it's kind of, we've been pushing forever for a carbon tax to make fossil fuels more expensive, to really put them in their place as far as the cost that they generate. I mean, all this extreme weather we're getting now has costs it's imposing on our economy. And those costs are not being borne by the fossil fuel industry, which they should be. So here we are. We're getting a tax, just not the way we envisioned it. Fossil fuels are getting more expensive. And in that sense, it would be a good thing if it pushes more investment in renewable energy. Yeah, it's sad to see it happen like this. I mean, you hate to see a war causing more people to go to renewable energy, but let's take that victory if we can get it.
As we wrap up here, in your mind, Jeff, is that Great March Heat Dome we talked about, is it a historic event, or is it just an introduction to the new normal?
It's absolutely a historic event. I've got a post coming up in a few days called The 5 Most Extreme Weather Events of the 21st Century, and this event ranks up there. As far as, it's kind of a subjective thing, things that impressed me as being whoa, I didn't ever expect to see that in my lifetime. The other events I might mention that made that list are, of course, the 2021 heat event that I mentioned, the 2012 heat event here in Michigan that I mentioned, and also a Russian heat wave back in 2010 that actually made bread prices go up to the point where the Arab Spring happened, revolt in multiple countries in Africa, overthrowing their governments because of this heat wave that caused a drought that caused grain prices to grow up. And finally, the Hurricane Sandy of 2012 is my final event for the list. So this event ranks up there, really incredible meteorological event that just left me stunned.
The 2010 Russian heat wave was just amazing. I covered it at the time. And also on the flip side of it, just like the weather we've been talking about, there were massive floods in Pakistan at the same time. So it was split into a wet part and a hot part, just as we just experienced. But I'm surprised that you would not count the 2003 heat wave in Europe that killed possibly 50 or 60,000 people.
That was the deadliest heat wave in history, and I was not following that as closely. I didn't start blogging on the weather until 2005, so that heat wave predated my attention spans. So this is a very subjective list I came up with based on things I've been following since 2005. So maybe I should qualify that most intense since 2005.
We've both been blogging since 2005, and that's quite amazing. We've been speaking with one of the best weather watchers and historians in America, I think. He's teamed up with Bob Henson and Christopher Burt. They capture big stories as they happen, like mind-blowing March heat wave crests, records melt from Arizona to Minnesota. Find links to all that in my show blog at ecoshock.org and check out yaleclimateconnections.org. Jeff, thank you so much for making time for our listeners.
Welcome, Alex. Good to talk.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
When summer comes in winter, we are in big trouble. It happened this year in the American West and Mexico. Hot summer days in Denver and over 100 degrees, 38°C in Phoenix. We're just beginning to understand how this happened and what it means. Is winter broken? Over the last 16 years, Deirdre Desjardins has studied science and tech on California water issues and climate change. As giant heat domes appear across the world, Deirdre explains this latest out-of-season heat blister in her blog, and she does it really well. She is the director of California Water Research. From California, Deirdre Desjardins, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. It's great to be on, and yeah, what a March we've had.
That was my first question. What was March like where you were this year?
It was really warm, and the sea surface temperatures off Scripps Pier in Southern California spiked to above summer maximum levels. And it was just I live in Santa Cruz, so it wasn't as hot on the coast, but there were temperatures broken all over.
Well, what do you think made that Western Heat Dome of 26 so historic?
I go into it in my blog post, but there's a background. There's been a shift that favors ridging. What's happened is the leading mode of winter atmospheric circulation over North America has changed. there is a pattern that started emerging. It's called the North American Winter Dipole, and there's a ridge over the west and a trough over the east coast. It's warm and dry out here and cold and snowy in the east. And we saw it, you know, that ridge was there intermittently all winter, and, you know, it was like we had two different winters on the western U.S. and the eastern U.S.
I never got to use my snow shovel here. I live also in the west, and it was just hardly like a winter at all. Look, I want to start with your first post. It was on March 17th, and it asks sort of, why did this crazy heat dome happen? And the answers aren't simple, but they're not impossible either. But I did have a stumbling block in your first post title. It says, the diabetic heat engine behind March 2026's record-shattering western heat dome. I looked up the word diabetic, but Google automatically substitutes diabetic, the disease. That's what happens. So what does diabetic mean?
Diabetic is heat that's added from an external source. And so the big one in this story is latent heat. When water vapor condenses into rain, that releases energy into the surrounding air. That's the engine. So in this case, a storm brought in, an atmospheric river brought in warm, moist air in the northwest upstream of that ridge. And the moisture condensed and released heat that shaped the pressure field of the atmosphere downstream. And they contrast diabetic with adiabatic, which it just, air changes temperature just because of pressure changes. That's like more simple summer ridging. You have a high pressure ridge and it gets compressed by the weight of the atmosphere above it, and compression warms it. But the extreme ridging we saw was because that ridge was getting pumped by this external heat source from this atmospheric river.
Yeah, I think your first blog post revealed, for me at least, a common misunderstanding about how we are changing the climate. We think the sun's rays bounce around in the air and that's why it's getting hotter. But it turns out we are changing the way water works in the atmosphere. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, as the planet warms, the atmosphere holds more moisture. In this case, there was a lot of moisture in the air over Hawaii. So all that moisture got transported up to the northwest, where it condensed into rain, releasing a whole lot of heat. And the background story is that there was more moisture in the air because of global warming. So that heat pump had more moisture in it to pump the downstream ridge.
This heat dome kind of happened before in 2021, but that was at the end of June. I lived through it. I was plastered to a couch in a place with no AC. It wasn't easy. So we had hundreds of people killed in British Columbia. Since then, we've developed science on that. Deirdre, what do we know? Is that another example of what just happened this year?
So I have to give credit to Claude AI, Anthropic's Claude, because I didn't make the connection with the precipitation upstream. I was going over the atmospheric patterns with Claude, and I know that there's, you know, a nonlinear amplification. But I mostly knew about warming of the land. And Claude said there's an atmospheric river pumping it upstream. And I'm like, and I go look, and I'm like, oh my gosh, right. Claude just did pattern matching. And so then I said, well, let's pull the literature. And Claude did a literature search. And I'm like, we have published this blog. You know, help me with a blog post. Because you could see the very clear and specific mechanism laid out in this series of papers on the Pacific Northwest. And yeah, it describes what happened. And so what was really helpful about AI, it's not directly an attribution, but this allowed journalists to start, you know, connecting with scientists, and scientists read it. And so it provides sort of an instant connection with the literature. And that's what previously took a lot of time, is you'd have to wait for a scientific publication, which could take a year or more.
We will be right back with Deirdre Desjardins and Regime Shift in the Atmosphere.
You're listening.